To Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11. I agree. Genesis chapter 11. Today we get to the Tower of Babel. This is really the third major event of the first 11 chapters of Genesis. Of course, creation is the first one. Noah and the flood is the second. And this event is the third. We've taken a couple weeks just to kind of lead up to it a little bit. Last week, we considered the overview of the migration and genealogical information from Genesis 10, this table of nations, so to speak. And we looked at that. Today's chapter 11 about the Tower of Babel itself. So we're just going to talk about the first nine verses, really. We won't get into the genealogies of the last half. We kind of touched on that last week as well. Actually, we'll start with talking about the setting of this. So look at verse 1. So now the whole earth had one language and one speech, and it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. A couple things just to kind of set the table a little bit, that God says they had a unified language. It says they had one language and one speech, literally one lip, one set of words. This was a time period where this is before the confusion of the languages, right? So this would make sense. People came off the boat, the descendants of Noah, all one language, able to communicate with each other, that kind of thing. That made it very easy to communicate, of course. It also says they had a unified location. Verse 2, they journeyed from the east or journeyed eastward. They found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. This is probably the area which we generally refer to as the Fertile Crescent, this kind of big area here between the two rivers, between the Tigris and Euphrates River. The land of Shinar is generally this area, okay? So they journeyed Ararat. The mountains of Ararat are generally thought of to be up here near Turkey. This is Asia Minor / Turkey. And so they migrated down and generally settled in this area. Okay, that's the set the table of what is going on here. The name Shinar is mentioned seven times in the Old Testament. I looked all these up. Perhaps the clearest one that gives us a clue as to the location, at least a geographical location of the land of Shinar, is taken from Daniel chapter 1, which describes when King Jehoiakim was taken into Babylonian captivity, and it describes things being taken into the land of Shinar. So I think we can at least infer that Shinar is associated with this area of Babylon, or which is right here on the map. So again, in this general area is the land of Shinar. Babylon would be considered in that area as well. May it make sense so far? Pretty straightforward, I think. Let's get on into what was happening. What did man do? Well, verse 3. They said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly." They had brick for stone. They had asphalt for mortar or bitumen. They said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth." Okay, so man, they got this idea, let's build ourselves a city and this tower. And it said they had bricks and they baked them thoroughly. This is, they didn't have like the big stones, for instance, like would be in Egypt, you know, to build the big pyramids. They had a lot of mud, a lot of clay, and they baked them. Literally baked them in the sun is how they would do this. And they would put them together with this asphalt, this bitumen, whatever substance that may have been to hold these things together. This is the same stuff used, for instance, by Moses' mother when she made the ark for the baby and she made it waterproof with the asphalt and pitch. Okay, same kind of idea there. Verse 4 states their intention very clearly in wanting to build a city and a tower that would reach into the heavens. Now, this is an example of an ancient ziggurat. A lot of people think that whatever the Tower of Babel looked like, it was probably something akin to this. This obviously is not the Tower of Babel, but something like this. This is called a ziggurat, and something that was elevated, of course, that could reach into the heavens, unto the heavens, this kind of thing, to get closer to God. What was the purpose of such a tower? What do they want to use this for? Any thoughts?
Make a name for themselves.
Okay, to make a name for themselves, Gary?
It was, in a sense, way I understand it. It was to unify them so they wouldn't disperse. They wanted them cut together as a unity, you might say.
Okay. So some kind of unity to keep them all together. Any thoughts here? Gail?
I've always wondered if it had something to do, because they seem to want to build it really high. Did they somehow think did they already have a religion of their own at that time? Or was this their religion going to center around this ziggurat that they wanted to build?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you're just making a statement or...
Yes, that was asking, yeah.
Well, up to this time, it was the worship of God that was the primary thought. But what's happening here, though, is the question. Other thoughts? Brian?
Were they trying to build a tower that would be higher than another flood?
That's a thought. They thought, well, let's build something that would get us high in case another flood like that happened. If that was the case, that wouldn't make a lot of sense, though, would it? Why wouldn't it make a lot of sense? Because God promised them he would never do that again. So that would be an indication of a lack of faith, at the very least. Okay, that would be an option, but I wouldn't hold that option. What are some other things? Why would they build such a tower? What was the purpose? Yeah?
Perhaps self-exaltation.
I think that's probably, coupled with what Deb said, this idea of self-exaltation, or as the text says, making a name for themselves. I think that's a big clue. That's a big clue to what is going on here. In his book, The Genesis Record, Henry Morris, a very well-known creation scientist, he passed away several years back, but he said they would build a tower unto heaven. In other words, a tower dedicated to heaven and its angelic host. The desire is to build a civilization for this people and a great tower as like the central feature whose tops would reach into the heavens or unto the heavens. Most likely there is religious purposes here. I think that would seem obvious. They want to build a city and then a tower in the midst of it. Well, that would seem to make a name for themselves and all these things to reach into the heavens. That would seem to imply some kind of religious nature to it. Now, what I find interesting is that when you look throughout the rest of the Old Testament, you find indications of worship that takes place on the high places. Right? You remember seeing that in your Bible reading? Remember seeing those phrases? And so they worship this God on the high places. Or when God's people were to go into a certain land, they were to destroy the high places. What were those high places?
Where the pagans worship.
Okay, pagans worship their gods. And why were they called high places? What's that?
They're probably towers.
They could have been towers, or they could have been
mounds.
Hills. Yeah. Literally elevated places. Now, why would they want to do that?
Everybody would know where to go.
Maybe. David?
Bring them closer to God. So be God.
Because they thought the higher we get, the closer we can be to God. Mm-hmm. Okay. This, I think, maybe, this is a speculation here, okay? But I think it's very interesting that they want to build this tower, which does seem to have at least some kind of religious overtones to it. And I think this might be an embryonic form of what would take place later in worshiping on the high places. Deb?
I think it's just also, in that area,
way to distinguish this is where we are, you know, and when you're grazing animals, you go out, you know, miles, and it's like, okay, you're trying to get back to the city, and it's like, where's the city? You can't tell until, you know, maybe you passed it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a back to a pride thing too, is like, okay, if we build something big and high, you know, we're great, and it'll take, for anybody that wants to go anywhere else, it'll take them a lot of effort to be better than us.
Mm-hmm.
So this way we can cause people to stay here. Let's all have a reason to cause people to stay together,
mm-hmm.
instead of there to be factions and people wandering off, and, you know, it's like, come here because it's, you know, look at us. We're big and great.
Sure, yeah. Steph, are you saying something?
Yeah, I heard a preacher one time talking about this and saying that it could have been just their way of salvation by works instead of worshiping God in spirit and in truth and worshiping him the way Noah would have told them coming off of the ark. They decided, we're going to get to God on our own. We're going to reach up to him, and we're going to be able to attain salvation/redemption through our own hands.
Mm-hmm.
Also, this same preacher mentioned that they had been told off the ark to disperse. And this was their way of saying, no, we're going to stay here, and we're going to build this tower.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get to God our way. We're going to do it our way. We're not going to obey God's way.
Right. Yeah. Good. Joan?
Unity in numbers. They were being unified to do what they wanted to do, and God saw that this is not good, so we'll disperse them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Art?
Yeah, they had to have some kind of a leader. And according to chapter 10, verse 9, it speaks about Nimrod.
Right.
And it says that he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore, it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. Verse 10 says, and the beginning of his kingdom was Babel.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the, there were other things that were going on too.
Yeah, Nimrod, I think, was definitely the leader here. And what I'm thinking of doing next Sunday for the class is taking that aspect, Nimrod and Babel, and tracing that through the scripture. I think he is a main component, a main figure in this. You're right. Yeah. Their motives for this, like we said, let us make a name for ourselves. What does that phrase mean? What do you make of that? Jared?
Themselves.
Sorry? Yeah, go ahead, Jared.
Yeah, they were proud of themselves and wanted to establish themselves as like the kind of the premier people in that group.
Okay.
In that land at the time.
Yeah? Is that what you say?
They're just proud of themselves.
Okay, they're proud of themselves.
And they would want to be remembered.
Okay, want to be remembered, maybe like a monument kind of an aspect there. Yeah, this is an interesting phrase. The people say, let us make a name for ourselves. They wanted to make themselves great. They wanted to make themselves world-renowned. See any problems with that?
They were the world. It was just them.
That sounds like an old song. Art?
Lucifer pulled the same deal. I will be like, and it goes on, and notice how I will ascend.
Right, yeah.
And I was reading the scripture a while back in Amos 9:2, I believe. It says, God says, though they dig into hell, I'm going to bring them up. Or you can say the grave, whatever. Although they climb up to heaven,
mm-hmm.
this would be interesting. I'm going to bring them down. And look at that. The tendency seems to be going on today. You know? I don't know what the thoughts are on everybody's hearts and minds, but, you know, you can see it.
Yes, yes. I think the key phrase here in this phrase in verse 4, let us make a name for ourselves. This is interesting. If you were to turn to chapter 12, God tells Abraham in Genesis 12, I will bless you and make your name great. He tells David in 2 Samuel 7, I have made you a great name. What do you make of that distinction? When here in chapter 11, these people want to build this tower. Let us make a name for ourselves. And then God disperses them. Genesis 12, Abraham, I'm going to make your name great. David, I'm going to make your name great. What's the difference between what's going on there? Darlene?
It's flipped.
What's flipped?
Who's in control?
Yeah. Who's the boss? Who's the authority? Yeah, Art?
We want a king. Remember?
Yeah.
Now Saul.
Right.
This is what we want. God said, what's wrong with me? I've been leading all these years, and now you want something else.
Right. Yeah, Marissa?
God is being glorified in one, and yet the other, they want to be glorified.
Correct. That's exactly right. Man wants to live, you hear me, you use the word this morning, autonomous. Man wants to live autonomously from God. I'm going to do this, let us do this so we can be this. God says, no. That's not how it works. I'm going to disperse you. I'm going to confuse your language. And God says in its place, Abraham, I choose you and I'm going to make your name great for my glory's sake. There's a huge difference. The issue wasn't necessarily the great name, okay? Not necessarily. The issue was who was going to get the glory for it? Who is going to be in charge of this? Who is going to be the authority of it? When mankind, jumping ahead a little bit, but when mankind thinks, I'm going to do this, God, God has quite the knack of saying, well, we'll see about that. When God says, I'm going to do something, it's always good. And it brings him great glory. Art?
In contrast to them saying, let us, God says, let us go down. Mm. Now God can come down and view the situation.
Right.
And deal with it.
Yes, that's exactly right. Okay, now there's something else here in the text I think that we should point out as well. Another motive here. They say, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. There was a desire here in building the city and all this stuff here. They, I can't remember who said this, but someone said that they could all stick together in one spot, lest they be scattered. Okay? Now, what was the problem with that motivation? God told them to fill the earth. Genesis 9:1, God told Noah, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth. Genesis 9:7, be fruitful, multiply, bring forth abundantly in the earth and multiply in it. Fill the earth. Disperse in the world. They said, well, you know what? Let's build ourselves a city and let's build ourselves a tower lest we be scattered. They were really in direct defiance against God. Now, the timetable of this is a little fuzzy in some people's minds. How much time transpired between the flood and the Tower of Babel? We don't know exactly. Probably a few hundred years at least. Genealogically speaking, when you trace the people and so forth, but it's a long period of time between those two things. But still, Noah told his kids heard this, his kids should have done it, their kids should have done it, disperse and fill the earth. Yes?
And there's a great possibility when you look at those genealogical timelines that there's a great possibility Noah was even still alive.
Right. That's right. So here we have an example. God gives the command to spread, to fill the earth, to multiply throughout the earth, rather than to be centralized like this. I think their motives seem to be based on human rebellion rather than obedience. They thought building this one centralized civilization was a better idea than God's plan for them to disperse. Any thoughts on that? Yeah. Yeah.
Would some of it be about like Nimrod and whoever was in the hierarchy there so as to have and keep control of
no
the
doubt.
Church?
No doubt. Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah, I was thinking that, Gail, because I was thinking, you know, there's manipulating people that say certain things, we see it today, of scaring the public to get them to do stuff. So there's ways to manipulate people to build for you, and then you can rise above and be king, or you can be their leader. If everybody's scattered all over the place, how do you can control people?
Yeah, yeah. I think we'll see this in the Antichrist. Well, God's grace, I'm not going to see it. We'll be observers from heaven. But I think it's the same kind of thing when the Antichrist comes. He's going to deceive people, and he's going to become the leader. Make a name for himself. That's what he's going to try to do. Yeah, Art?
Little did they realize that when God said, you know, that they were to be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth, sooner or later, they would be moving out. But they were trying to get ahead of God. Do it their own way.
Do it their own way. That's right. They're trying to do it their own way instead of doing it God's way. All right, let's go on here. God steps in then in verse 5. So we have here, what did God do? Verse 5, but the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, indeed, the people are one. They all have one language, and this is what they begin to do. Now nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. So God saw what was happening. Maybe there was a mentality in the people's minds, hey, we'll do this and maybe God won't notice, right? We know God told us to fill the earth, to spread around, but we'll just do this and hopefully God will let it slide. No, God sees what happens on his earth. He knows what happens on his earth. He saw what was happening here. God already knew what was going on, and in verse 6, God says that the plans of the people are viable, but not proper. They're not proper. They needed to be changed. So again, quoting from Henry Morris, the problem in the Lord's own judgment lay in the unity of the people, a unity which was made possible only by a common language. The decision by practically the entire population to construct an autonomous, man-centered civilization in direct defiance of God's command could finally be ignored no longer. God is patient, right? God's patient with people. But there's a time when that patience wears out, so to speak, and God steps in. The patience of God is not forever. It is long, for sure, but it is not forever. So he saw what was happening, and then God confused their language. You go on then, verse 7, come, let us go down, and there confuse their language that they may not understand one another's speech. What could have been a strength for them, God changed and turned it into a source of difficulty. Instead of a common language, God confused their speech, thus confounding their communication and ability to build. We're not told how many languages or how many people could speak each language. Only the languages were confused so that the people were scattered. Yeah, Gail?
I've got a question about that. I've always wondered, were different groups speaking some kind of language that God gave them to understand, and then another group of people was given another type of language that they understood each other?
That would be my guess. Again, the text itself doesn't seem to indicate how many languages or how many people, but I think it would make sense logically for there to be at least a small group who could understand each other and then go to a place and repopulate that area. That would make sense to me. Yeah,
I was thinking along those lines also that it could have even been families.
Sure.
You know, like
or tribes or something like that.
So that there would at least be some cohesion amongst a family and not utter chaos.
Right. Yeah.
And there was the other chaos as it was because God committed it. So they had to make some kind of decision.
Right. Yeah. So it confused the language. God scattered the people. Verse 8, so the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city. Notice even the wording of these things. Verse 7, let us go down and confuse the language. This is God's doing it. Verse 8, the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the earth. God is the one who is the actor. God is the one who is in control of these things. He is the sovereign God over the affairs of men. He scatters them, and I think I may have put this up last week, this kind of general idea, at least, of where the sons of Noah ended up going and migrating different people groups. Okay, this is the table of nations, of course, but this is a result of the tower. So generally speaking, Shem, generally speaking, Ham, generally speaking, Japheth up here. Okay, people spread far and wide. Nimrod does seem to be, he's the one who stayed behind. He became the leader of what is known as Babel. And we'll, like I said, we'll try to talk about that, Lord willing, next week. Generally speaking, it is commonly viewed that these descendants spread all throughout these various regions. There's going to be some overlap, but generally that was what was taking place. And the place was called Babel. That means confusion, because it was there that God confused their language, the scripture says. Okay, Art?
In Jeremiah, I believe it's 10:27, it says, in the heart of man, it's not in him to direct his own way. And he thinks he does. And I was thinking of Genesis 6:5, where it says, when God saw the wickedness of man was greater than the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was on his people continually.
Yep.
So these people, whatever was going on there, they were being directed by a force that was causing them to go in a certain direction. And again, I go back to Isaiah 14, how Lucifer fell from heaven. So he's this god of this world that he hovers around to find people that are so eager and ready to follow in a direction that's against God.
Yeah, yeah. This is a universal thing, which leads to the takeaways here. When men seek to make themselves the big deal, when they seek after the greatness themselves, that is blasphemous to God. When God chooses to elevate people into renowned positions, it is honored and blessed. There's a huge difference between the two. But this kind of thing, this is happening still today. There is a level of Babel that's in our world still today, in humanity. Because we still do tend to fight for our own way. We want to make ourselves the big deal. We want to make ourselves great, seem great. And whenever we have that, whenever we act upon that, we say, oh, I'm going to make myself great, I'm going to make myself a great name, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this. That is blasphemous, right? James 4 said, look, you can make your plans, but you got to make plans with God in mind. If the Lord wills, we will do this or that kind of thing. Okay. Now, by the way, that doesn't mean every time we say we're going to do something that we have to put the tagline on it, Lord willing. Okay. There's nothing wrong with saying that, but don't feel like you have to say that after every plan you vocalize to someone. You understand what I'm saying? Sometimes that can become just really a tagline and really lose its meaning. You got to know that in your heart. You got to believe that in your heart. Yes, it's all if God allows this to happen. I want to submit my plans, my ideas to God. Okay, but this is something that mankind still struggles with today. We want to make ourselves the big deal. Secondly, whenever we think our plans and our ways are better than God's, we are always in the wrong. Whenever we think that our ways and our plans are better than God's, we're the ones in the wrong. And should always expect opposition. Why? You think of a biblical principle that essentially says such. David? And? Gives grace to them. God resists the proud. He opposes the proud. So a proud person says, my plan, my way is better than God's. That person should expect opposition from God. That is proud arrogance in the face of God. That's exactly what was going on here in this Tower of Babel. These people were wanting to make for themselves a great name. They said, no, God, we're not going to disperse. We're going to huddle together. We're going to make for ourselves a great civilization. We're going to build ourselves this great tower under the heavens. They were acting in defiance, in arrogance against God, and God opposed them and took definite actions against them. These are life lessons for every one of us today. When we bristle against biblical teaching, when we refuse to submit to God's way, it's like we're seeking to create little towers of Babel ourselves. We're confusing our fantasy for God's reality. The fantasy is, I'm going to seek to live life my own way, and it will work. That's a fantasy world. God's reality is, you live in submission to me, and when you do things my way, it'll bring God great glory, and generally speaking, it's a great blessing to us too. That doesn't mean it'll be problem-free or stress-free or anything like that, but it does mean when we do things God's way, it is always honoring to God. But if we are going to be in defiance of this and refuse to live our lives in obedience to God's direction and fight for our own way, we're pronouncing ourselves to be a Babylonian, confused in our view of reality and in defiance of God. Babel was not just an issue in Genesis 11. It's an issue that continues to this day in the hearts of men. Okay, you see the parallel, the application of that today? Babel is an illustration, I think. It really took place. It's an actual historical event. But that historical event is an illustration for us to learn from. We can say, well, I'm never going to build a tower like that. Yes, but we do in our own hearts. And we do it in defiance against God. And God says, look out. There's opposition to that kind of thinking. Does that make sense? Any thoughts, comments, questions, additions you want to make to this? Yes, John?
I just have a comment question on verse 7. I think it's interesting that it says, come, let us go down and confuse their language.
Yeah.
Us. That implies Trinity plus angels, or what do you think?
I think it's a Trinity, very much like Genesis 1. Let us make man in our own image, yeah. Yeah, good question. Yes, Gary?
It's also interesting that this happened close enough to the flood that the flood story went with all those languages.
Right.
It's kind of all over the world.
Yeah.
This year the flood.
Yeah, there's flood stories all over the place. Many different languages, people groups. Yeah, that's right. I haven't done a lot, really, any research on this, but looking at, you know, Answers in Genesis website, for instance, and talking about Babel and language and stuff like that, there have been studies that have been done that give indication, in, as far as linguistics are concerned, that languages had a common beginning. Well, yeah. Genesis 11 tells us that. Science takes time, though, to catch up with what the Bible already says. Yeah, Art?
I'll tell you one thing. If you look on a website under all kinds of topics, no matter what it is, your mind will go nuts.
Right.
There's so much going on now.
Yeah.
I've never seen so much information in all my life.
So much information, so little wisdom. Yeah. Anything else here? Yes.
I really think, because many times they think, that if I had followed God in the first place, it wouldn't have messed up my life so much. So that it seems like that's what we were before. And then when we knew our Lord, it changed.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And every person is unique. We all have our own stories, and it's all under the sovereign plan of God. Yep. Very good. Well, that's all I have for today. We can close up shop and get ready for our potluck then. All right, we'll be dismissed.